Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening. Hello, world. This is Pamela Lockridge. I'll be your host tonight on the Stop Child Abuse Now radio show hosted by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. NASCA.org, NAASCA.org. The scan show number tonight is 2633. I wanted to welcome you and welcome our special guest tonight. It's Kathleen from Florida. And before I introduce her, I'd like to tell you a little bit about NASCA and our mission. And NASCA is all about child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. And we have a single purpose at NASCA, to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with only two goals in mind. Number one, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. And number two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And I want to make everybody aware that April is Child Abuse Awareness Month, and so we are recognizing that, and everybody's wearing their blue ribbons because that represents people paying attention to the pandemic that we have and the national problem that we have within America. And that because of COVID and people not being able to get out and go to children not going to school, they're showing up in the ER very injured and near death. So, you know, and there's a lot of domestic violence going on as well. So now I'm going to bring on our special guest. She's from St. Augustine, Florida. Hello, Kathleen. This is Pamela.
Hi. Hi, Pamela. It's so great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Thank you for coming on. How we do the show is kind of like three segments. The first part of the show will be you go in chronological order, telling your story about your family, you know, and what kind of family you were raised in, and you know, if any abuse started during that age, and then move on to your high school, college, through that era, and then the last segment we want to leave for you to tell about what you're doing to advocate for, you know, child abuse or other.
Yeah. Okay.
So do you mind starting?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So for me, you know, it might be a little bit different than some people that come on, you know. For me, I grew up in a home that was actually very happy and healthy. And my mom was very much affected by child abuse. And this is how I was involved in that. You know, when I was very, I was born, my mom was 15. She was 15 when she had me. My dad was 17. They're amazing. They're still together. But we lived across the street from my grandparents. And my mom was the middle of 11 siblings. So,
wow.
Yeah, and there were a lot of kids. And like I said, we lived across the street. And I have memories of, you know, my mom, I remember it like it was yesterday, her running across the street to break up all the chaos, and she would send her younger siblings across the street to my sister and I, who were around their age, for safety. And we would stand there at the chain link fence and just wait for everything to calm down, all the chaos to calm down. And most of the time, we ended up bringing my grandmother to the emergency room. And I remember as a child sitting in the back seat and thinking, gosh, why does she stay? Why would somebody stay in a situation like this? I know it's not healthy and normal because I don't live this way across the street. And so it just really affected me at a young age. Now, as we got older, you know, as I got older, my sister got older, I always still wondered, why do people stay? So I also realized why we lived across the street from my grandparents. My mom wanted to be able to make sure that she was able to save and help everybody else, because my grandfather was the abuser, and he abused not only my grandmother, but all of the children as well. And she obviously knew this because she grew up in that same situation. So for, you know, I always just wished that I could change something about that. And I know that my parents tried to keep it from us. And even as I got older, when I started talking about it more, my mom said, you know, I really thought that I kept you and your sister from knowing really what was going on. And I said, but we can see it. You know, we were right across the street, and we're there visiting. I mean, we can see what happens. But I will tell you, you know, we were never allowed to stay by ourselves, my sister and I, over at my grandparents' house.
Wow.
And that went, yeah, because my mom knew, you know, what kind of things happened. And also she knew, which now she's opened up now that she's gotten older and he's passed away, but of the things that have happened, and I know she's just touched the surface and hasn't really told me probably close to everything, but my mouth still drops open and I just can't even fathom. But this is what's happening. This is what's still happening. I mean, it was happening back then, and it's still happening now. And these are things that we do have to talk about. And I love it that you're opening that conversation, because this is how we save people. This is how we really let people know that this is what's going on. You know, my grandmother passed away about 30 years ago, and it was from a brain, you know, brain trouble. I always keep thinking, you know, I always know you can only get beaten so many times. And but my grandfather passed away about 6 years ago, and I know they're both watching over me and saying, keep doing what you're doing, keep doing what you're doing. And he realized what he did was wrong, you know, as he got older, but the damage was still done.
Was he ever abused as a child? Do you know?
I do not know that answer. I don't know. Nobody seems to know.
I want to kind of go back to, how old were you when you first realized this was going on? How old were you?
About 5. I mean, I really remember that.
And what did you see it? Can you remember and tell us
what
you saw? Right.
I remember seeing, you know, just things being thrown, people being pushed around. And then, you know, in my head, I remember seeing my grandmother with broken bones, concussions, bruises, you know, I just remember that. And I have this super memory that sticks in my head of her with a cast on, and she didn't have any teeth. And I just remember, yes. And I always saw with bruises, everybody always had something on them, and I always knew that there was something going on. But, you know, at that young age, too, you're not really putting everything together. But I will tell you that it has always stuck with me. But luckily for my mom was one of the siblings. I mean, not all the siblings. I mean, some have passed away. But the ones that got into relationships and things like that, not all of them went on to healthy relationships. They repeated the cycle. They repeated the patterns. Or they got into a relationship where those patterns were repeated. And I feel blessed that for me, my parents definitely did a 180 with that. It was definitely changed. But it did affect me in a way that made me realize what I already knew at a young age, what does go on. And I remember even being in school and being just very aware, almost like a third party, right? Because I didn't have to live in it, but I was aware of what goes on places. So I do remember going home and telling my mom things, you know, if I thought something, oh gosh, so-and-so came to school, it looked like they had this bruise. You know, I always felt like I was hyper aware of what was going on.
Right. That's part of that. How often were you around your granddad?
Well, we ended up moving. I can't remember how old I was, but, you know, it was quite a few years that we lived across the street. But like I said, we were never allowed by ourselves, my sister and
That's
I.
That's right.
Yeah, we were always, so nothing ever happened to us because my mom made sure that wouldn't happen. I mean, and I will tell you that even as we got older and we know I have grandkids, we have great, you know, our parents have great grandkids before he passed away, and he was never able to see them by themselves either. My mom would never let that happen, even though he had, you know, stopped drinking. I mean, he wasn't, you know, he was living by himself. The abuse, I mean, that had stopped, but the child still wasn't there.
How many siblings did your mom have?
I guess there were 10. So there were growing up in the house. Well, they were very spread out in age. They were very spread out in age. So, like I said, I have an aunt and uncle that are my sister's age, and then so they probably range for about 30 years. It was like a 30-year spread.
Did your mom witness any abuse from her dad, was she abused by her dad?
Both, yes. Yeah, both.
Okay. Well, you know, you're not here to tell her story, but at least probably later on, at least later on you can understand, you know, more about what you saw. And how did you feel? I mean, did you ever break down and just cry? What kind of relationship did you and your grandmother have over this?
We had a good relationship, and we didn't really talk really in depth about any of this stuff. You know, it seemed like back then, like I said, she's passed away 30 years ago now. I mean, I'm going to be 50 soon. And when I was younger, she had kids that were mine and my sister's age. So it was more of that kind of a relationship, you know? She liked to bake. We'd be there baking. You know, she always still was such a nurturing caretaker and absolutely amazing lady. You know, and what went on behind closed doors, they like to keep behind closed doors. But since, I mean, my mom was the one always going to save the day in some ways, I knew what was going on. So,
okay,
so you know,
Kathleen, we have a panelist of people that would probably like to comment or ask a question. Would that be okay with you?
Okay.
One is Susan from Alabama. Susan, you're on with Kathleen.
Hey, Kathleen.
Hey, Susan.
How are you
tonight?
Well, I am doing good.
You.
And me too. And this is a fascinating story that you have. And I just, it makes 100 things kind of bloom in my mind wondering about to ask you. And that is, you know, like, did your grandparents had children for a long time, especially if they were having children when that are about your age. So did he put a pretty good front on and like treat your grandmother nice in front of everybody sometimes? Or do you feel like
Absolutely.
He was just like abusive to the end and, you know, maybe she was having to, you know, have relations she didn't even really want to have?
Oh, you know, he was definitely good at faking how great he was out in public. I mean, I would see some of the drinking and I would see some things that would go on inside the house when, you know, if I was there with my mom. But no, out in the open, nobody would ever imagine that he would do those things. That's the way most of this goes, right?
Yep.
With
that's
abuse.
What I grew up with,
any type
a
of
man like
abuse.
That.
Yeah. And so always very put together. And, I, you know, my mom even tells how when she would call, they would send her to the school nurse all the time because she'd go to school with cuts and bruises and all this stuff. And the person they would call would be him to come pick her up, you know? And this was, you know, back in the day.
Back then.
The thing is that, yes, that's the way it was. And he would come in and look all, you know, because he always, even until the day he passed away, I will tell you all, you know, he had a pair of dress pants on, a button-up shirt, tucked in. I mean, it was just always very put together. And people would think he would never do that. Not him. Because he was a very upstanding person in the community. But how many times do we see that? I see that all the time.
Oh, yeah. Mine too. I mean, that's exactly what I grew up. We grew up, you know, definitely solid middle class, upper middle class. And to this day, in the little small town that we're from, I'm going to say half the people know the truth and half the people don't. And I still, from time to time, have somebody say to me, oh, you know, your dad was such a great guy. And I'm like, nah, no, you didn't know him. I knew him. Not a great guy.
Yeah. Especially when you're living with him, right? But, you know, I'll tell you, like, my kids, so my kids and my great-grandkids, I mean, they don't know that of him, you know, because by then, by the time I had kids, my grandmother already passed away. He wasn't drinking anymore. He was, you know, but we still, nobody let him by themselves with him. But, you know, they don't
know
that.
I just commend your parents, too, to think that your parents got married at 15 and 17. Because I'll tell you, as a victim of child abuse myself, it really affected, like, I've had a couple marriages that failed because I, you know, had that tendency to be around people who needed fixing, you know, then, you know, those relationships generally do not work out because men don't really want to be fixed, but I was just trying to solve the problems, you know, that he had, you know. You know, and I would see those problems in other people, whether it was alcohol or impulsive behavior, and I would think, oh, gosh, I would be great, you know, and I'm sure, you know, your mom had, I mean, is your mom fairly unscathed to this day? I mean, has she had counseling or any, you know,
yeah,
of that?
Yeah, through the years, oh, definitely, through the years she has, and you know, she just made it up in her mind from what she, you know, tells me that she wasn't going to have a family that lived that way. Although she's had to work with a lot of things within herself. And she even says to this day, it's just things that she still has to work on, you know, and her
me
and my
too.
Dad are just, and yeah, I mean, and I think, and that's the way it is. That's the normal process of the whole thing. But I will say that, you know, my dad's just an amazing guy. And so it just works so great because they're just...
Yeah, she was blessed that way, right? To find somebody amazing,
right.
You know?
Right. Yeah, nobody that needed to be fixed. And they just complement each other so well. So, yeah, that was, you know, somebody from above looking down saying, okay, this one's for you. You guys are good together. And they have been. So, I mean, I know that they both know that that's a blessing. But, yeah, she even, you know, now that my grandfather passed away about 6 years ago, she opens up more and more. And, you know, I have a nonprofit that we work with things like this. So I'll tell you about that at some point. But, you know, she helps with this as well. And she opens up more and more. And the people that talk to her and open up to her, it's like therapeutic all around. You know, and
right. Absolutely.
So,
yeah. And I would love to hear some about your nonprofit and whatever kind of work that you do. That to me, that kind of stuff is very interesting, and that your mom reaches out and has a way of reaching out. You know, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think being involved in things helps people.
Yeah. Thank you, Susan, for your comments and
questions. Thank you, Pamela. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to go down the panel now. I'm going to open up the mic of Darlene and see what Darlene has to say. Darlene?
Okay.
Hey.
Hello. You are very brave in sharing your
Thank
story.
Thank you. How are you tonight?
Fair to middling, I suppose. I had to be middling because I'm middle of the United States, so, you know.
Okay.
Fair to middling.
She's from Tennessee.
She's
I'm
in Alabama now visiting.
But I'm from Tennessee.
Yes, and I used to live in Florida, by the way, but it was a little town called Greensboro, Florida.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
I love That's awesome. It's warm down here.
It was kind of freakish, though, because whenever I was down in Alabama and it was always hot, then I moved to Florida, and then I had to wear a coat because in that area, I was not used to that sea stuff, so I was colder.
Yeah.
Until I got used to it, then I started wearing shorts all the time, you know?
Yes, you get used to it. Yeah, definitely.
Exactly. But you are very brave on sharing your story about your grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very brave, and I'm so glad that you have your mother's support with you as well.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely a blessing. And like I said, I know that both my grandparents are looking down on me saying, keep doing what you're doing. You're helping so many people, opening that conversation just like you all are here, and letting people know that there are safe places where they can open up and talk and get help.
Exactly. And now I could call you a sister, because now that you are sharing your story, you're now a sister.
Oh, yay. Thank you. I love that. All right.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Thank you. Darlene.
Thank you.
Darlene, can you share a little bit about how, some of the domestic violence you saw, because and how it affected you as a child, and see if that correlates with something that Kathleen felt. About the domestic part, okay. Well, I went through that myself as seeing my dad shoot up in the air, chasing
mm-hmm.
my stepmom, like they thought it was a fun game, you know. And another thing, when I was being abused by my ex-husband, how my kids, they had to cower, and they were afraid, that your daddy would end up turning on them. So you know how even if you are not the one being abused, if you're around violence, you got to feel like, when is it going to turn on you? Eventually it's going to turn on you too and hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. I think especially if you're living in the house,
right.
Because where is your safety then? And I think, for me, not living in that house and just living across the street, I knew that I was safe and my parents were going to keep me safe. And so I did feel that. But I always had that feeling of, like you're saying about the kids, what are my, if they're my aunt and uncle, that they're the same age as me, what are they feeling every night when they go to bed? And as I grew older, and my mom and I have talked about this more, I can't even imagine the scary feeling that it is to just be at home, which should be your safe place, and not feel safe and not know
right.
what's going to happen. And so this
and
happens
see, we live
so
next
many
door
times.
To my ex-mother-in-law, and my sons would go over there. And sometimes my sons would come in with a smack face and stuff like that from over there.
Oh, goodness. Oh.
So that was something he would have never thought that his grandmother would have, and his uncle would have punched him in the face,
Right. Oh, my goodness. How are they doing today?
Well, my oldest son, he's in the United States Space Force now. It used to be the Air Force where he was in. Now they moved him up to the Space Force part.
Awesome. Congratulations.
And my other son, he works with computer programming type of stuff. He does pretty well.
So they're doing okay.
But
after
he still
all that.
Has flashbacks, and his daddy tells him he's sorry for putting them through it and everything. But my son's got a nervous condition, and my ex-husband used to say it's because your mama's got a psychological thing. And now he's finally saying, you know, I'm sorry I put you through that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I can imagine just not, even as an adult, you know, you want to feel safe. You need, your home should be your safe place.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Darlene.
Yeah, thank you,
thank
for,
you
for sharing that with me.
Well, thank you.
Okay, Darlene, we'll get back to you in a little bit, okay? We're going to go back to the story.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I do have one other person to come on. Let's see what Mark has to say. Mark,
okay.
Do you have anything to say to Kathleen?
Yes. You were saying that your mother was one of 11 children, okay, and she was about the middle of the
around the middle
sibling.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, your grandfather, was he drunk every day? Or was this, the beatings came on with just when he was drunk, or was he a constantly daily drinker?
You know, I, from what I was told and what I know from what I saw, I always saw him drinking. But he had a job, too, I mean, until he lost that, and then they lost the house and sold that, too. But, you know, when he would come home is when the drinking would start, and then he would leave and come back. So I believe it was mainly when he was drinking, but the drinking was quite often. But, you know, I guess the way, too, can you always say that drinking, just because it's drinking, is an excuse for it that some people use?
Oh,
do you
I think? Don't think it is. No. But it just seems like they lose control. I have another question. You said that he was well known in the community. Did he ever caught outside of the house, drunk, or busted by the cops, or anything? Or was this all contained in that little house, and it stayed in that house, and only you guys knew about it?
Well, I'm sure. Yeah, things happen outside of it as well. But you know this. When, goodness, like I said, I'm going to be 50, so this stuff was quite a while ago when it was happening, and with the times that I remember him getting in trouble and things like that, it was just kind of dismissed. You know, it wasn't like that big of a deal. I mean, it was to everybody that was happening to, but not the community, if that makes sense. You know, because back then, I don't even know like the best word to use, what domestic abuse and when children were being abused, it was almost like an in-the-home thing. Even if something happened outside, it was still like, okay, you take care of that problem at home. I mean, it's not like that now, but even 30 years ago, it was.
Right.
In most places.
Well, I have one more question. Was it just physical abuse in the house, or was there any sexual abuse?
I know of physical, emotional, financial abuse. I have, I suspect that there was sexual abuse. But like I said, my mom just opened up to me a little bit here and there, and I know I don't know the whole story, and that's okay. She doesn't, you know, when
right.
it's the right time or when she feels like it, she'll talk about that. But that's what I suspect there was a little bit of everything.
Well, yeah, just let your mom give it to you when she feels the right
absolutely.
Time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that you had to witness that, and even, you know, you've had, it hurts when you see your uncles and aunts going through stuff and you can't really do anything because you're like, you're the same age as them and you're across the street, but I'm sure it hurts you at times. You wish you could have just done something.
Yeah, it definitely did. And that's why, like I said at the beginning, it stuck with me my whole life so far. And then I was able to start helping to do something about it. And that's what I do now.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's all I had.
Thank you. These are great questions. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. I'm going to put you back on mute. And Kathleen, we're going to get back to your story. You know, what we're looking for is how this domestic violence in your grandmother's home, how this affected you. Because this is your story, and other listeners,
right?
The audience are listening, and they're trying to find a path like you did to, get through, deal with the memories, see if you have the same feelings that you had, or they had different feelings. And so you said you first started witnessing this at 5 years old. What about middle school? Where did you live when you were in middle school?
Then, yeah, we had moved by then, and I know it was really hard for my mom to do that, but she needed to do what was best for all of us in our family, and so we weren't around as much. But for me, all the stuff that I knew that was going on, I knew that I always wondered, if my grandmother knew that there was help and support out there, if she would have reached out. And
okay.
So I, like I said, for me, it just stuck with me in the back of my head always. And I was always really very aware of what was going on with, like, the kids, even in middle school, like, what was going on? What was, you know, when people would be bullying, or, you know, because that's a form of abuse, whether it would be to other students, or you could, and you always wondered, gosh, are they being treated that way at home? I mean, there were always all these things that always went through my head. And I do feel like that was because I did know that these things were possible. Because I think if you are never exposed to it, then how would you even know that abuse does happen in homes?
And so
that's why it's
and so you were,
important to educate.
So you were, yeah. So you were being exposed. And so you knew, you know, a child and their innocence is very important, right? Very important to child development. And so, you know, as I look back over your life and you look back over your life and your development, your mental health and what have you, can you tell that maybe you had some kind of anxiety or any kind of fear that you grew up with? You know, that you had to deal with, even though you were gone. I mean, you know, that stuff.
I really think for me, I wouldn't say that I was fearful. I mean, I think for me, it made me just more aware. So
okay.
It went the opposite way of just being, okay, I'm just going to be more aware of now what's going on around me, aware of what people are saying, aware of what people are doing, because I do know this is something that's possible. This is something that does happen. Instead of being afraid of what could happen. And that's just was my way of thinking. And I believe, you know, I thank my parents for that since they raised me in that way. So I feel that that's a good way to be able to keep ourselves safe, not be anxious, and realize that we as adults then, right, and my mom and I talk about this too, and even though she was the one that was abused, you know, have the choice of who we then choose to be around.
Right. So it sounds like you had a great buffer and protector in your mother. And was your dad as protective of you?
Well, we always had very open conversations about things once I got older. I mean, we did when I was younger too, but more about things like this and safety and what things that could happen. Yeah.
Okay. So did you go to college after you went to through high school?
You know what? No, I got pregnant at a young age. Then I got married. So I worked.
Okay. And So you have never seen a you've never seen a therapist or gotten help by seeing the domestic, by witnessing the violence or knowing about the violence?
No, I did not. Not for that. Like I said, I think my mission, and it just stuck with me because that's just my personality, was, okay, what can I do to try to help this?
That's amazing that you were so mature to think that way, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you. I do. I did always feel like I was more mature for my age, but
well,
to be a
to
young
go
mom,
that
does it for you.
Right. So, are you still married to the same man?
No. So I got divorced. I had two children, and then I was divorced, and now I'm married. I've been together now with my husband for about 22 years. But it was just, yeah, it's awesome. And we have four kids now all together. So, but, yeah, I was divorced. And it was just more of a matter of, you know, one growing up faster than the other, maturity, things
right.
like that. So,
I
was a single mom for a while.
Was
no,
there
wasn't. And I think, no, I mean, like I said, I was very aware of any relationship that I was in, if somebody started to act a certain way or, you know, show any signs or, of anything that was controlling or anything like that, I have always had my little, like, okay, well, that's not going to work.
So what do you think is the, what could you tell us do you think is the most important thing that happened for you that set you on this path of resistance, path of maturity? What do you think caused you to do that?
You know, I think there's a couple things. One, yeah, when I knew that this abuse was going on across the street, and as I got older and I still knew that things were going on, I realized that I don't want to live that way. And I think, I mean, maybe some of it was just kind of passed down on the things my mom would tell me, because my mom didn't want to live that way. She didn't want to live that way either, right? So I always had that, not only being taught to me, but being seen of, that's not a healthy life. That's not the way you want to live. So don't get yourself into that situation type of a talk, right? Type of a thinking. And so that's what always stuck with me. And I really think that's what it was, you know, be aware. To follow your intuition, that's one thing I've always been taught, and I think it's very important when you feel something about somebody. And this is the thing, though. We're talking about adults now, right, once you're an adult. But when you're kids, the kids that are growing up in homes like this, they can't help it, right? There's nothing
right.
that they can do at that
right.
point, unless some, you know, child services gets involved or something like that. It's just once we become an adult, then we can make those choices. And I think that's why what you guys do is so important, to open that conversation so that people know. I always feel like if we can open the conversation about all of this kind of stuff, then at least, and also the people that are doing the abusing will realize, oh, my gosh, people are starting to talk about this. People are watching. And people are going to do something about it.
That's exactly what we want to think. You've hit the
right.
nail on the head right there. I wanna,
that's what we got to do. And we together we're stronger.
That's right. That's what Bill says, our co-founder. So your grandmother,
mm-hmm.
was she ever call the law on him? Did she ever try to stand up to him?
She would call. Well, she was like 4'11", 4'11".
Oh,
he was 6'4".
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah, big difference. But, you know, then when the police would come, and she would say, oh, it's fine. You know, the whole, I didn't mean to, it's fine. I don't want to press charges, things like that. Yeah, my aunt even told the story about, you know, she's the one that's my age, about, you know, when the police would come and every time she would try to talk, then the parents would kind of shut her down. No, you know, because back then it was different. It's not like they took the kids in a different room.
Right.
To talk to him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the police back then didn't know how to handle it. I mean, we're just now, they're just now today, you know, like in my state of Louisiana, if anybody, if say me and my husband were fighting, came out, we're both going to jail. That's how it works. It's not one has, you know, they don't tell.
Okay.
Yeah, they don't tell. Yeah, they don't tell one person to leave because that person can come back mad and do something, right? So they both, both people go to jail. And so they just don't deal with it. Like, you know, they deal with it. They get to the nitty gritty of it. I don't know how other states do, but Louisiana's crackdown, which there's not much to do about Louisiana, but that's one thing.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's good. That's a good, that's a nice place too. It's pretty.
I'm going to bring.
Yeah. So, I mean, bring, I
oh,
go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I just feel like that did set me on a path, and it set me on a path to where I am today. And it affected me in ways that I tried to make the best of those ways. And, you know, for me, unlike some other people that this might have happened, they were abused as a child. Like I said, that's really something that we've got to bring awareness to because they aren't able to do anything about that themselves. But I feel like it set me on a path to be able to try to help as much as I can, like you all are, trying to open up a conversation.
Well, at NASCA and other places that I've researched believe that children witnessing domestic violence, it actually hurts brain development. It hurts learning capabilities. I mean, it does to them, but I think more so people living right within the home, witnessing it day in and day out, whereas you were somewhat protected from it. I mean, I don't think your mom let you see it every time it was happening and, you know, brought you in.
No.
The situation.
She tried not
protected
to.
You.
She tried.
Right.
Right. She tried not to, but we're, you know, kids are very curious and they're smart and they see what's going
That's
on.
Right.
You know, but you're right. When you're living in the home and you're living in fear, that should be your safe place.
Right. I'm going to bring Susan on to talk with you. Is that okay?
Sure.
And we have another guest that joined us, Sharonda, and we'll talk to her in a minute as well. Susan, you're coming on with Kathleen from Florida.
Hey, thank you for putting me back on because, Kathleen, you know, I'm sitting here listening intently and I'm thinking a couple things. You just said one of them. Kids are real smart, okay?
Mm-hmm, they are.
And so I could just picture you playing with, you know, your same age aunt or uncle, and you probably don't even have to talk a lot to kind of share things intuitively, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's how I was as a child. And the other thing, I'm just wondering if you're working, doing the kind of things you are today, because in my mind, there's almost nobody that's more special in your life than your grandmother. And when you know that your grandmother had to go through things like that and live with it, you know, that must have been a good big incentive to you. Maybe in the back of your mind during your younger years, and then as you got older, you kind of got some focus on what you wanted to do with it.
Yes, yes, definitely. I mean, and it's always been in my mind of how I always had just had that question, And, yeah, the things that we do today, we do to in her honor. You know, we use her name and to raise hope.
Well,
raise hope.
What was her name? And please share her name with us.
Oh, her name
because...
was Carolyn. Her name is Carol. Was Carolyn. And, you know, what we do is I have a nonprofit, and we raise hope, help, and support to those getting back on their feet from domestic abuse. But in that, when we're doing that for the domestic abuse survivors, it's also helping their children, right? Because they've got to get out.
Sure.
In order for their children to be safe. So, you know, so we have one resource center already, which is called Carolyn's Haven of Hope. So we use, you know, everything that we're doing is in honor of her, because I always wonder if she would have known that there was help out there, would she have reached out? And, you know, there's help in so many different places, and actually pretty much almost all countries, not all, but almost all countries have help and support out there. So it's a matter of connecting people with that help and support. And that's
right,
really
but
important.
You know, right. But, you know, 30, 50 years ago when she's dealing with it all, let's say 50
mm-hmm,
years
there
ago.
Wasn't.
No, there
mm-mm.
really wasn't. People, you know, I remember I really didn't even, growing up as a victim of child abuse myself, I don't even know if I really ever heard the term child abuse until I was in my 20s. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Growing up, it was just not a term that I heard as a kid or a teenager.
Right.
And, you know, and if I caught wind one time of adults talking about some guy around town and maybe something he said to his daughter, and even then it was really super hush-hush. You know,
mm-hmm.
The only
yeah.
thing I can say is that one time my mother, right in front of my abuser, who was my stepfather, you know, that I had to live with the whole time I was growing up from like 2.5 year old until I was old enough to get out of the house. You know, she looked me square in the eye with him sitting next to me at the kitchen table and said, you know, well, you'd tell me if anything like that happened to you, wouldn't you? And I'm like, oh, Mom, what bad timing, you know.
Yeah.
I was in seventh or eighth grade, and
oh
and he's glaring at me sitting next to me. I'm like, oh, yeah, sure, I would tell you, yeah. You know.
So, so did she know what was going on?
She did not, uh-uh. No, he was a master manipulator. You know, he kept his own sister quiet. When I finally came out as a senior, my senior year in college, you know, I just kept everything so repressed. And then I went through this huge bout of post-traumatic stress syndrome when I was a senior in college, because I too had my daughter when I was 18 years old, stayed in college, okay, putting a bunch of pressure on myself to get graduated so I could get as far away from this guy as I could. And, you know, so much people that are in that situation, your mom might even be kind of like this, where you're almost super achiever, overachiever, because when that kind of stuff happens to you as a child, you know, one thing that I always was in, and that was always in movement. I was always gone out of the house if I could be, activities. I joined every activity in high school. You know, I just kept myself hyper busy. And I think that mm-hmm. hyper busyness from child abuse victims just comes from that if you slow down or stop, you have this dreadful feeling that somebody might catch you. You know, you kind of live
right.
with that. So I did not come out until I was about 22 years old. And then the first person my mom turned to was my stepfather's sister, because they were very, very close friends. So she immediately called her on the phone and said, did this ever happen to you? And his sister broke down crying and said, yes, he did the same thing to me.
Goodness.
So in a way, that was good for me because I got instant validation, you know. He was a
right.
he was a serial abuser, you know. And he was an alcohol abuser too, by the way, which I think a lot of abusers,
yeah.
you know, sexual child molesters are alcoholics too. I would probably guess at 90% or 95%, right? You know.
I would suggest you're right, yeah.
Yeah, because I think a lot of yeah, a lot of times those behaviors probably wouldn't, you know, I think the alcohol is the fuel, you know, it, then they have something to blame it on maybe or something. I don't know.
Right.
Psychology.
No, well, that's what I was saying before. I think a lot of them say that that's the reason why, but it's still the person doing it.
Right. No excuses, right?
Right? Yeah, right, right. So how are you doing? How are you doing now with all of that?
Well,
in
I got to tell you, I went through this great therapy. I got a therapist in college who helped me through my senior year. because I really did have post-traumatic stress. Like I had, all of a sudden, I was afraid of knives. I was afraid of killing somebody. I was, you know, it was just weird stuff, just completely weird. So for 10 years, I kept myself in really good counseling. Like I even went ACOA, 12-step programs, you name it. Because I had a child, and I'm like, I cannot be freaked out my whole life. You know, I'm about to graduate from college, you know. I've got to work. I have a child to support. I was a single mom, by the way, because the marriage did not work out. And and then Pamela reached out to me, and I got to tell you, one thing that's so important, and I hope your mom does this too, and I don't know her age right now, but I think ongoing counseling is important. And on that note, I'll just make the announcement. Tomorrow I have a 10 a.m. appointment with a counselor, and I'm going to do, I think it's called EDMR or EMDR type therapy, because I think once you're traumatized as a small child and it goes on for years and years and years, like it did in my case, it never hurts to revisit therapy. And, you know, I've internalized, you know, for years you internalize, and even though you know it was somebody else's fault, it's not your fault, our brain has a hard time unwiring and rewiring sometimes, you know? I found myself in the last year really thinking things like, even though I'm an irrational grown-up adult now, I still can take a situation that's a perfectly nice, innocent situation, and I can just make it dark as heck, you know, in my mind. And I know that's just the trauma. That's all it is. And I don't want to be doing that.
They call it trauma brain, right? Because your brain has been affected by the trauma, and it can get better. It just takes, like you said, continuous therapy and help. But the blessing is help out there.
Yeah, and self-care. Yeah. And, you know, one thing that I have met from other people that have suffered in this way is that sometimes they forget about the self-care. You know, they're so busy caring for others and that's kind of how, you know, that's life to a degree, you know.
Right,
Self-care is important.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I'm glad
you guys. Thanks for letting me talk. And I want to hear about your nonprofit, too. I want to hear more about the work that you do. And I'm sorry that I just spitting out about myself, okay?
No, this is awesome. I'm glad that you shared that because it helps.
Hey, thank you, Pamela. And thank you, Catherine.
You're welcome. I'm going to go down to Darlene. Darlene, you're on with Kathleen. Yes.
Hello, Kathleen. I'm back.
Hi. How are you again?
Pretty good. I just got through eating a bowl of ice cream, so I'm better.
Okay. There you go. That's awesome. Love it.
Yeah, rock and roll. That would make it better in a heartbeat.
Yes, it will.
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad you went through it's kind of hard to say. I'm not glad this thing's happened to you, but I'm glad that you came out ahead where you are today.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. And I'm so glad that my friend Shawanda is getting ready to speak to you now, so I better scoot over a little bit.
Okay. Okay. Enjoy the ice cream.
Okay. I just thank you.
Thanks, Darlene. Okay, Sharonda.
Ma'am. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I am great.
Good.
Sharonda, do you have any comment or question for Kathleen tonight?
I'm listening to her story, and I'm just glad that she got help. That's really good. And I can only imagine what went through her mind sitting to the table. I just can't come to think what she was thinking when her mom asked her that with her abuser sitting right there. I just don't know. I'm kind of lost for words. But I'm grateful as well as it is with her. Yes, definitely. I'm grateful for you.
Thank you for calling in.
Oh, you're
welcome. Yeah, thank you for calling in.
You're welcome.
Okay.
You're welcome.
We're going to get back to Sharonda's story. We've got about 30 minutes left in the show, Kathleen. So let's see. I just kind of wanted to know myself. I mean, you know, we love our grandmothers so much. I mean, somebody said, Susan, I guess, said, you know, they have a very special place in our heart. Did you show your grandmother special attention, knowing what she was going through? Did you just like? I mean, how did you?
Well, I think I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that it was even special attention, just because it was just always attention, because we do love our grandmothers, and I, you know, she was just such a sweet lady. You know, she's like that lady that, you know, all the animals love her. The birds like land on her shoulder when she's outside. So it was just nice to always just spend time with her when we could. And, you know, I just always remember her like speaking of ice cream, eating a bowl of ice cream. That was her favorite. And do fishing with cane poles. And so we'd do that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I always just would sit and enjoy her time, because I knew too that she went through a lot. You know, she was always going through a lot. But, you know, if he wasn't there and it was just all the kids, it was a different feel. You could feel the difference.
Wow. There was not tension like usual, huh?
Right, yeah. You could enjoy the ice cream and the cake and everything else that she was doing.
Are you still in contact with a lot of the children of that relationship?
Well, yes, and with all of them. However, the one of them just passed away actually a few weeks ago, and she was the one that was closest to my age. So she was only two years older than me. Yeah. And she herself got out of an abusive situation about 6 years ago. No, I'm sorry, 6 months ago. It was 9 months now. The time's flying by. And it was just very unexpected that she passed away. So, and, you know, she had a lot of trauma that she was still dealing with from childhood all the way up. And she, unfortunately, every relationship she got into was an abusive one.
And see, that's what happens. That's a learned thing, you know. When you see it happen, you think that's the way the world is. You don't know different.
Well, and I think you start to think that that's what's normal, but also that you're not worth anything. You know, your self-worth just goes down. Your self-perception, what you think and feel about you, is very unhealthy. And so it's easier for somebody that's very good at manipulating to make you feel even worse about yourself, or manipulate any situation to make you feel bad. And then it's just then one day and the next day and the next day and the next time, next thing you know, it's 10 years later, 20 years later.
Okay. In your bio, I see where you said, I always wonder why people stay and why abusers do what they do. You know, that's the big question that all the domestic violence, educators and, you know, organizations, you know, why people stay. And there's so many different variables. Can you talk to that?
So many. Yeah, well, that was something that was always on my mind. I always wondered that. So then I got certified to be a domestic violence advocate about 5 years ago, and what the first thing I found out was that there's no one reason. There's so many reasons, and every situation is unique. There is not just one single reason. There's so many reasons, and every situation is unique. And so from there, you know, when people would call, and I talk to people all the time about their situations and try to see where they need to be and where they, you know, get them to a safe place or wherever, meet them wherever they are, it's even reiterated to me that every situation is absolutely so unique.
Right.
So,
and all
laws
in each state are unique too. I mean, it needs to be some kind of uniform national thing.
I agree. I agree with that 100% because it makes it really wishy-washy, especially when you've got somebody in one state and then they get, say, a restraining order and then it's only good for the state.
Right.
And then, you know.
These people to me are terrorists, and somebody mentioned homegrown terrorists. I mean, that's what these people are. They terrorize people. You know, we don't want enemies from foreign countries coming in, but what about domestically from within the homeland, you know? We don't want these people to think this is something normal, something that they could get away with. I mean, my body's my body, their body's their body. We shouldn't be putting our hands on each other's bodies unless it's consensual. I mean, you learn that in grade school, don't you? Don't touch Johnny, Johnny don't touch Jane. You know, stay away from each other because you could hurt one another, accidentally even, you know, let alone intentionally. And I just wish we could talk to that 6'4" person standing over that 4'11" little woman and just let him know, you know.
Yeah, well, I know he's watching it right now, and I know he's always – and, you know, I got along with my grandfather as years went on because he, you know, he did change. He did change.
Oh, he did.
And it was really – oh, yeah, he changed because he stopped – he had stopped drinking. This was as he got older, you know. It was really hard for my mom because when he was sick, you know, there was nobody to take care of him. So my mom took care of him. And she said that was the hardest thing she has ever done.
So your grandmother passed before he did?
My grandmother passed. Oh, yes, yes, yes. My grandmother passed away about 30 years ago.
Okay. And how long ago did your granddad?
About 6 years ago.
Oh, wow. So your grandmother passed by a brain injury. Do you think it was from the domestic violence at all?
I think that you can only be beaten so many times because she had already had so many concussions that, you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. So that would
Yeah, but
I mean,
you can't prove that.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You couldn't prove it.
So,
yeah.
So your mother took care of her dad for how long?
Yeah. Gosh, well, probably about 4 years.
How long did she?
Probably about 4 years.
And you say,
if I'm guessing it.
And you say it was hard. What was hard about it?
Well, like she said, she still remembers all of those things that happened. And, you know, if he would start something, you know, or kind of just be mean, he wasn't doing it. He wasn't abusing or anything at that point. He had stopped drinking. But she would put him in his place, you know.
And he accepted
it. Yeah, he did. He did.
He
and
didn't
that's
have
why
choice,
I know to
though.
This day. Yeah, he had no choice then, you know, and because she said, I'm not dealing with this, you know, in so many words. And it was, you know, and she said, like she even says to this day, it was, she had to really work within herself to forgive in some ways, not that she'll ever forget. And she said, not really for him. She didn't forgive for him. She forgave for herself.
Absolutely.
To be able to move on. Yeah. Yeah.
So did he ever say he was sorry for anything he'd done and admit to it?
He did. He did. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk to
I mean, but it was a long years, you know, many, many years of abuse. But, yeah, it's kind of one of those things. It's just in every situation, it's so different. Every situation is so different.
Absolutely. So did he apologize to your grandmother?
I don't know that, but I would suspect no. I mean, maybe he did sometimes, but, I mean, the abuse was still going on then, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
So her abuse must have happened all the way until her death, it sounds like.
Yeah, I would say so.
Oh. That is so sad. And I hate that you had to see that and hear about it, know about it as a child and into your adulthood. But
well,
you started
like I said,
a nonprofit.
Yeah.
And you're also reaching out, let's see, you've got a nonprofit and you're certified as a domestic violence advocate. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so what that means is, you know, trained to talk with survivors of domestic abuse and domestic violence, coming up with safety plans because everything's so unique, making sure they get to safety, learning, being able to go into the domestic violence shelters. There was just training, you know, it was basic training to be able to do that. And like I said, I initially did it because I wanted to understand why people stay, but I didn't find my answer because there's so many different reasons.
Right.
Yeah, and then I started.
Every
situation is unique. Yeah.
Right.
And so many times it involves children.
And that's the very sad part, and that's what we here at NASCA want to help prevent. But we do see how child abuse and domestic violence and domestic abuse, I mean, they are so intertwined, you know,
mm-hmm.
that you can't unravel. You can't unravel that.
Right.
You know, where there's domestic abuse and violence, there's usually child abuse, right?
Yeah. There is, I mean, not in every case, but in most cases. Even if it's, it could be emotional abuse, it could be psychological abuse, it could be verbal abuse. You know, it may not be physical. A lot of times
right.
it is, but it might not be. But the kids, like we've just been talking about, they're still being affected.
Absolutely.
It's still a form. It's still abuse. Even seeing abuse is abuse.
Yeah, one story the other night was where the mother left to do something and the abuser, the stepdad or something, told the child that he was never going to see his mother again. Can you imagine what that child was thinking when the mother left? The mother was coming back. That was a lie. But the child was telling.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was psychological.
Well, my mom tells me those stories, too. Yeah. That's what my mom told me, some of those stories where, you know, that's what her dad told her and her siblings. You know, if they ever said anything, he would say is if you ever say anything to anybody else, I will kill your mother.
Oh, wow.
So
and they
that was another reason
why
they really didn't.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm sure they believed
mm-hmm.
it. Yeah. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you
have another nonprofit, Hopeful Handbags. Tell us about Hopeful Handbags.
So what we do is, the base of what we do is we collect once-loved handbags from communities, and we fill them with necessities and things to make people feel amazing. We put a handwritten card and we tag the bags and we donate those back to those getting back on their feet from domestic abuse. So they're mainly handbags for women. However, men are abused as well. So we have what we call man bags. Maybe they're backpacks. Maybe they're So we raise hope, help, and support, but also spread awareness and prevention. So we have prevention programs, like we have a self-defense class going on right now, and it's online. So we offer those to survivors of domestic abuse, you know, whether it's childhood abuse or domestic abuse, and there's no charge for anybody that is a survivor of that. And then it's also go open to others in the community, like other women in the community, and the fee that they pay goes back to help us help more women. So we help people with different things, right? It just depends. It's a very, like you all, you know, every situation is unique. So we just take them and meet them where they are, basically, you know, virtually meet them where they are, and then see what their next step is. So maybe it might be an immediate need. Maybe they need to get to safety. And then what we do then is we coordinate with a shelter to get them in there or the best place for them and then go from there. So there's just so many different things that we do. We call ourselves a bridge organization because the minute they step on the, you know, once they step on the bridge, we'll help them get to the other side. I mean, right now we're raising funds for different areas for mainly starting here, but for housing, because one of the gaps that we find is that when the survivors, they leave, right, they finally leave, they've got their kids with them, they might be staying in a shelter with friends and family. When that time is up or their time to move on, they don't have a place to go, because typically, even if they have a job, you know, their credit may not be good because it's still connected with the abuser, and or maybe they do have decent credit, but they've got all these outstanding bills. I mean, you know, renting a place these days is like buying a house, unless you find a private person that'll just give you a chance. So we're raising money for programs where it's a contract that they would sign that they will also remain in the programs, in counseling, get their financials. You know, we have somebody that helps with the finances and getting that all on par for them. So they just have to, you know, go there step by step within that year so that they can qualify for their own place after that year. So it's like it would be scaled rent, right? So based on their income. So there's just so many different things. But since abuse is such an issue worldwide, we started in 2017 in St. Augustine, Florida, but since then we've grown globally. So we have affiliates that are helping us spread awareness, and they're collecting the one-stop handbags and eggs. Everything that's donated, each community stays within the community. But we are in the Caribbean, Australia, United Kingdom, France, Scotland, and the UK, and Canada. But it's because abuse is an issue, and people, you know, contacted and said, hey, how do we do this in our area? Because it's happening here too. I mean, it's a worldwide issue. And like you said, most of the domestic abuse, well, domestic is households, right? So it includes child abuse as well. And most relationships where there's abuse, if there's children, there's some sort of abuse typically.
Absolutely. Kathleen, you've been really good. You're really doing a good job. I want to applaud you for your bravery.
Well, thank you. So are you all.
Yeah. Thank you. You're now a NASCA family member, like Darlene said. And I don't know if you've gone on our website and looked around.
I have.
But, oh, cool.
I did.
So, yeah. Was there any one thing that stuck out to you that you really liked about it?
Oh, my gosh. I just love what you all are doing, because I think the education and awareness is the most important. And that's like even with when I talk about domestic abuse with Hopeful Handbags, I mean, the awareness and education is very important for people to know what signs to look for. What do you do if somebody comes to you and tells you this? You know, who do you call? Who do they call? You know, and what you all are doing is opening that conversation. And I think that is really important in getting people involved, like this show that you're having right now, right? Getting in this, it's allowing people who may otherwise not even know this stuff is still going on. And that they can call. They can chat. Sometimes they can share, and listening to the stories that even that I've heard from the callers, which I thank every one of you for sharing, is helping somebody else, because people need to know that they're not alone. and that there's help and support out there.
You know what's so hard, though, is these people are actually in love with their abusers. You know, abusers are always loved.
Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt. They're not always abusing, because if they were, it would be different, right? Unless they were trapped.
Uh-huh.
I mean, some of them are trapped, physically trapped, and they cannot leave. But, you know, that's how they keep them. You know, it's like, okay, I'm going to be nice for a little while. Oh, now I'm not. And even when they leave, you know, they will grieve. They grieve the part of that person, the good part. The parts when they did say, oh, my gosh, I love you. I would never do that again. Or when they bring them flowers or when they do whatever, right? But you're absolutely right. They
right.
really do. But abusers are really good at manipulation.
Right. And that's the part that people need to learn about, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need to come out of the trees to see the forest, right? To see the
right.
whole picture. And that's what you do as an educator, to teach these women about what's happening to them. They can't see the whole picture. They're just seeing different, because it's like Stockholm Syndrome, right?
Yeah.
Stockholm Syndrome, where is where the abuser provides for them, so that they think they can't leave, otherwise they'll have no provision. They can't survive. But that's not true, and that's the falsehood and the different belief that has to be changed.
Right, absolutely, and that's why we always say, you know, for people just to call and chat, just call and chat. We also,
right.
you know, do a video every Sunday to show the different kinds of abuse, or to talk about the different kinds of abuse, not show it, but talk about the different kinds of
yeah.
abuse, so people realize that it's not just the bruises. It's
yeah.
not just the bruises. And the financial control, like you're talking about, where are you going to go? What are you going to do? Or, you know, the when they're putting them down, well, nobody else is going to want you. And then they start to believe
right.
it.
Exactly.
But you're right. The education is huge, and educating the community. And that's why what we do with our Once Loved Handbags is we have drop-off locations within communities where we get businesses involved. And because people,
right.
you know how people will say, oh, you've got to start at home, change starts at home. Well, you and all of us on this call know that sometimes change cannot start at home because it's already dysfunctional. It's not safe. Things are not going on there that you'd want to go on. So it's got to start somewhere else. So by starting it in the community, that's how we're able to get the communities involved, because they'll go in, they're like, oh, what's this? Oh, gosh, domestic abuse? That really happens around here? Well, of course, it happens everywhere, you know?
Yeah.
And so we plant that little seed in their head, and then they start to check it out and like, oh, gosh, I didn't realize this was happening. And the thing about abuse is it doesn't matter a socioeconomic background. Like, that's just out the window. It has
right.
nothing to do with how much money somebody do or does not have or where they live or anything. It happens everywhere.
Right.
And that's another part that I'm sure you agree that people need to understand and
Kathleen,
be aware
we're
of.
We're coming up for absolutely. We're coming up.
Well,
to
thank
the end
you
of
for
the
having
show.
Me.
Well, we've got 10 minutes, and I'm going to bring on
oh,
each.
Good.
I'm going to bring on each. What do they call panelists? And let them say a. Couple sentences to you. Susan, you're on with Kathleen.
Hey, Kathleen. And I just want to say thank you because for what you're doing with your handbag program and helping in the community, because self-esteem has to start somewhere, you know,
mm-hmm.
and just showing somebody some real attention and giving them a hand up and giving something to them that is meaningful, you know, that's just another little piece of the self-esteem puzzle.
Right.
Thank you. It is. It really does. We always say it raises hope. They look in that bag, and even if they start getting excited and their energy's raised, right, even if it's for like 60 seconds, that is opening that flow for better, amazing things, right? And for them to feel better.
Right. Absolutely.
For that truth to come through. Truth is what they
mm-hmm.
need.
Yeah.
Mark, do you have any comments before we go?
Yes, I just want to thank you for coming on and applaud you for the work that you are doing now. And I just want to say, you know, it seems like God had his hand on you as a small child and gave you a special gift to be aware. And he kept you basically protected from domestic violence, but you were made aware of because it was in your family unit. And now look at what you're doing today. You're helping. So I just applaud you and continue keep on keeping on.
Well, thank you very much, Mark, and thanks for being here.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you, Mark. Darlene?
Yes. I wanted to say something about a comment right quick that was said.
Mm-hmm.
People generally stay, it ain't, because they're in love or something like that,
yeah.
That's not really love when they mistreat you like that. That's
right.
Not love. That's hate. That's
right.
Anger. And I prefer like my daddy that was abusive to me over my other people in my life, because he actually showed me some good things. You know, he actually did things with us as well, you know, not just sexual and everything else, but he actually played ball with us and different things like that. So, and we actually had tickle fest, so that was kind of fun, you know. But anyway, yes, and a lot of people made the comment a lot of times saying, well, you know, your ex-husband wasn't all that bad. I don't see him really beating you or nothing like that either. I said, well, you didn't live it. You don't know it.
Yeah, true. Right. Yeah, unless you're in it, you don't know it, that situation. Because there's all the situations
exactly.
are unique. And you're right, you know, being it's not love. But I think you start to have a different idea of what love is, depending on what's happening and what kind of attention you're getting.
I want to say this. I had a friend who wanted me to try to talk to her daughter into
mm-hmm.
leaving, and I couldn't get her mind changed. And he stabbed her over 70-something times, killed her, of course.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. So, you know,
sorry to hear that.
I'm thinking love and stuff. Y'all, get out.
Right.
Right.
Get
the
out.
First time. I say the first time they raise a hand to you, get out until they get help.
Yeah, I agree.
Because that's a person that needs help, and they've got issues, and they need to fix them. And
right
if they're
on.
Not willing
yeah.
to get help, then you need to get away from them because you can't fix them, right?
Yeah. Right. Tell for your safety. You
all right.
You.
Thank you, Darlene. Sharonda? Can you say goodnight to our guests and have a comment?
Yes, I'm very proud of her efforts to make a difference. It speaks volumes whenever you go through hardship like she did with the abuse and everything, and then she turn around and like the gentleman said, you know, God had his hand on her. I mean, he protected her, brought her through, and look at she's going back and helping others. That is a huge thing that's so needed. And I mean, it's like, again, it's fine. So I commend you for doing what you're doing, and I'm so glad that I was able to hear part of your story that I did hear. So keep doing it. You're touching lives, and it's a ripple effect. It's going to hit one person, go to the next person. Everybody that touches you have a seed sown into them. So that is wonderful. God be glorified through your life. So keep doing what you're doing. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks for those kind words and for all what you all are doing, because that's what you're doing, is you're touching lives, literally changing people's lives. Yeah.
Thank you, Sharonda. Okay, Kathleen,
you're
welcome. We're at the very end of the show, so I'd like for you to leave our audience with some words of hope, words of whatever you see, guidance, any kind of words that you would like to leave them with.
Well, first of all, to know that you are limitless, right? Anything that you set your mind to, you can do, and we're all worth it. We're all worth all of our biggest dreams, and pay attention to our intuition. I always like to say, when somebody shows you who they are, believe them.
Mm.
And that goes in with our intuition as well. So when people show you who they are, believe them. And that can be professionally, personally, romantic, friendship, whatever it is. But also know that what you think and feel about yourself is actually the very most important thing, not what anybody else thinks and feels about us. It's what we think and feel about us, which is our self-perception. And that's something that we talk a lot about with Hopeful Handbags, with our survivors, is what we think and feel about ourselves. I mean, I work on it with myself all the time. It's an everyday process. But that's what we have to do. We have to put that time in for ourselves every single day, and it doesn't have to be for long, but for us to really look inside and say, okay, what do I think about myself? And if it's not good, start working on changing that part of it. Because self-care is very important, but it's different than your self-perception of what you think and feel about yourself. Because that dictates the chances you take, the choices you make, the relationships you stay in personally and professionally, and the ones that you leave because you're like, you know what, I'm worth more than this. So that's something that I'd like to leave you all with. But I really appreciate all this. I appreciate you all sharing some of your stories with me, and I am honored to have been here with you all.
Kathleen, I looked at your website, your Facebook. You are a beautiful lady inside and out, I can tell. And we have been privileged and honored to have you speak to us tonight. And I just applaud you again, and we'll be on saying go get it, girl, when it's time to teach these women about domestic violence and men. You've probably seen men as well.
And men.
That have gone through.
Yep, absolutely.
And,
yeah.
Right. And so we are so happy to have you. And if you don't mind, if you want to call in sometimes and be a panelist, so, like some of these other ladies, you just say,
oh, I
and
love
Mark.
That.
Yeah, so I'll call upon you sometime to come on and be a panelist for other special guests. And you can comment and ask questions, and we just
thank you.
Hope to reach one. If we can reach one, right, it's worth it.
Well, it absolutely is, and I know that you all reach many more than that. And like I always say, together we are stronger, and never underestimate the power of hope.
That's right. So thank you, Kathleen, for sharing what you're doing.
Thank
now
you.
And for being okay.
Thank you, all of you. Have a great, amazing night. Thank you.
All right. We're at the end of our show. Want to say good night to all our NASCA family and to those around the world and to our to the abusers. Stop abusing our children and stop abusing your spouse or your loved ones. Okay, so good night from NASCA.
Love Talk Radio.